Hey, thanks for being with us, friends. Welcome back. After a week off, it's good to be back with you on this Monday afternoon as we continue through the book of Genesis. Kind of a very quick pass at the beginning of chapter 28 here. You'll remember that where we left the story, Jacob, at kind of the urging of his mother and the anger of his brother, has decided that it would be good to get out of town. Esau has essentially let it be known that as soon as Isaac is no longer with them, he plans to end Jacob. And so Jacob thinks, and his mother agrees, this is a good time to go visit Uncle Laban. So his mother, Rebecca talks to Isaac, says, I want to send Jacob. I don't want him to marry one of these locals. I want him to go get one of our people. So she sends him to Laban's house. In the early part of chapter 28, Jacob blesses him and gives him that mission, go find a wife from Laban's people. And then shortly thereafter, we have a little blurb. Esau heard that conversation or heard of that conversation. He also takes a wife who is not a Canaanite. And the implication here is that Esau is continuing to try and please his father, to please Isaac. That's really the only place the story goes. Interestingly, he takes that wife of Ishmael's daughter, and the Ishmael-Abraham connection comes back into the story. And so it seems as though Esau continues to try and honor and please his father, even though he has been, in the context of the story, left behind a little bit.
Just one comment there, Clint. Mm-hmm. So you can interpret that to be, as you say, that Ishmael sort of comes back into the story. Once again, just another point for us to recognize that the key characters of the story, though they are the main characters, are not the chief character. The chief character is God's will, which is being done through these families. It's not a traditional sort of Genesis story outside of the biblical sort of context where you sort of build up the characters to be heroes and everything they do is right. Here, it's far more messy than that. It's that God makes it right even through the brokenness. So just a different way of conceiving of a Genesis story.
Yeah, and then in the interest of time, and I think also in the interest of trying to hit the mountaintops of Genesis, we get back to Jacob's story. And the first story that we get from Jacob after this sending is along the way. And it's interesting, it is not given, it's given a name, but later in the story, we're just told he came to a certain place. So let me read a few verses here, then we'll discuss them. Jacob left Beersheba, went toward Haran. He came to this certain place and stayed for a night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of that place, he put it under his head, lay down in that place. And he dreamed there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top reaching heaven, and the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, I'm the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give you and your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and the east and north, the south, and all the families of the earth will be blessed in you and your offspring. Know that I am with you. I will keep you wherever you go and bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I've done what I've promised you. Let's stop there, Michael. So Jacob finds himself in literally a hard place. He lays down with a rock for a pillow, and while there, he has this dream. And the word ladder is not quite, probably not quite the full expression of the word. It's almost like a temple or a staircase kind of idea. Ziggurat is probably the best translation, but a word that's not real familiar to us. And he sees angels ascending and descending. So he sees God on the throne, and he sees the angels coming and going to do their work, and he hears the words of God again, restating the covenant promise, which has now come to him as the third generation in the line, and know that I am with you, and I will keep you. So again, a very dramatic restatement of the promise we've seen several times in Genesis.
Which I think it's worth noting here is important for two reasons. Okay, so the first reason here is it is unique to Jacob, this idea of having a dream. You know, we've seen this previously where God has sent messengers who have spoken to some of Jacob's forebears. Here we have a dream, which is a very common sort of mystical experience, especially in ancient religion. Here we have this happening to Jacob. So that it's important for the means and the mechanism. There's a uniqueness to this encounter with God and to God's assurance of the promise. But the second is that assurance of the promise itself. We've already seen all of the complications of this family relationship. We've already naturally, as the reader, begun to ask some questions. Well, you got Jacob usurping Esau. You have all of this firstborn, secondborn kind of rivalry happening. What's going to happen to the promise? That is now firmly put to bed, and no pun intended, but that is now firmly resolved. That not only has the human father given the promise, but the heavenly father has said in this dream, has verified, yes, indeed, the promise will live in you. And so that this is in many ways the catalyst to the story ahead. All of the messy questions that we've spun up now are going to be pushed forward from this point because we know God has literally spoken through this dream. So this serves an important function. It has long lived in the memory of the faith. I mean, this is an important story, but it's an important story not just to the larger faith and to the hierarchical chronology that will follow it. It's actually important to Genesis itself. This sets off the entire next act of what's going to happen in this book.
Yeah, and I think it's helpful to remember that if you call to mind, we have not seen or heard a lot of God so far in the Jacob stories. All of the stuff with Jacob and Esau, the blessing, Isaac, Rebekah, God was a sort of background character in that. And now we have in this passage, we have the word of God essentially transferring the promise. We had the blessing that has been transferred from Isaac, but here we have a statement from God sort of confirming that Jacob is now the bearer of this promise and that he will be the conduit through which the families of the earth and the peoples of the nations will be blessed. And when he awakes, this is a very interesting part of the story, verse 16, then Jacob woke from his sleep and he said, surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? None other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So these are really interesting words from a preaching kind of Bible study perspective. These are fun words. God was in this place, and I didn't know it. And that's often said of our difficult places. That's often said of the places where we lay down with a hard pillow on a hard bed, metaphorically speaking, where we're in difficult situation. And God restates a promise to us. God tells us again that we are blessed and that we are beloved. And we join Jacob in saying, God is in this place. I didn't know it. I didn't know God was here, and here he is. And the word fear is troubling in verse 17, and he was afraid. Probably a better English translation, he was in awe. He was amazed. He was astounded. There certainly is a sense of fear to that, but it is not terror. It is respect. It is awe. I think awe is probably the best word. And then he says, this is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven.
Yeah, Clint, isn't it interesting that Jacob finds the place of God on the road of Exodus, really on his way out of his family relationship. He's going to a place for his own safety, and it's on that hard road away from what he knew to what he doesn't know that he now encounters this promise again. I think you've already intuited as a preacher that is, I think, one of the things that makes this text so compelling is because as a narrative, it's eminently relatable, and I think it is almost infinitely preachable. There's a sense in which we can easily find ourselves in the midst of lives that also wander, often moving from one thing to another. It is in those places where we find God. What is striking about Jacob's encounter here is that it was most certainly shrouded in a great deal of uncertainty and anxiety and maybe even frustration and discomfort. The idea that he's sleeping in the most uncomfortable, most exposed sort of environment, is it also paired with the reality that this is where he re-encounters or is reminded of the promise that God has made. These things combined make this story beautiful, that it's all of it at once. It's both beautiful, it's both comforting, and also it's an exposing being at rock bottom. It's exposing the difficulty of life and how it's in those moments we often discover the holy place, the place where God touches earth, that thin moment of life. And here we have it in narrative form. And it really, Clint, doesn't it? It opens the gateway to the rest of the Jacob's story. I mean, this is in many ways the pivot point where it turns from his old family to what God does with a new family.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Michael, but I believe this is the first interaction we've seen between God and Jacob. We've not encountered a story where those two characters have conversed with one another, and here it is, and it is on the way somewhere. It's not at home, it's not in the temple, it's not in the new place, it's along the path, and God calls him to this promise. Now, what's interesting about this as we read the next part is that Jacob remains Jacob. So again, let me read a few verses and we'll talk about it. Jacob rose early in the morning. He took the stone that he put under his head. He set it up for a pillar. He poured oil on top of it. He called the place Bethel. The name of the city before was Luz. Then Jacob made a vow and said, "If God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone, which I set up for a pillar, shall be God's house. And all that you give me, I will give you surely a tenth." So this is a fascinating story. I think it is tempting to read a lot into this, and I will admit to you that I think I do this. I struggle with Jacob as a character, and so he has this dream. He has this profound moment. He awakes in awe of God and says, "God is in this place, and I did not know it." He has received from God a promise that once belonged to Abraham and passed through his father, that he will be a great nation, that his descendants will be too numerous to count, and that the families of the earth will be blessed. And Jacob's response is, "If." Now, he does honor God. He sets up the pillar. He calls the place Bethel, which means the home of God or the house of God. But listen to the vow. Verse 20, "If God will be with me, if he will give me bread and clothing so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God." If-then statements are very rare for characters. God makes several. The prophets make some. But it is very unusual for a character in the Old Testament to offer an if-then statement to God. "If these things happen, then you will be my God." And I think the author here wants us to remember that we are dealing with a man whose development is still in process. I think this is a subtle reminder that Jacob is still primarily looking out for Jacob.
Yeah, I mean, one could make a case that Jacob never escapes that orbit, in fact. And I think that maybe this is what makes us uncomfortable, is because all of us would like the idea of the heroes of the faith to be unblemished. I mean, we would like for them to be perfect exemplars of what faith in God should look like. But it's striking, the account of, say, Abram, when he's called to go, is that he packs up and goes. Yeah. I mean, it's actually to put them in contrast, Abram's narrative is really stark and simple. Jacob's narrative is actually quite fleshed out with a lot of motivations and choices that get made. And it's actually very striking here when we get a zoomed in version of what's happening here. He meets God. The promise is made, which to almost all of those who have come before, the promise is big enough. But to Jacob, you have this idea, well, hey, if God's going to be with me and keep me, you know, if God's going to keep this good thing going, well, then I'll set up a temple here and this will be God's place. You know, I think there's a sense in which Jacob's character in some ways points out it's not about human fulfillment. It's not even about human ability or faithfulness, because there's a sense in which we know, as the readers of the Old Testament, one doesn't get sneaky with God. One doesn't out-barter God. That it's God's will ultimately. But yet here we see a man who is counted in the lineage, and he does show up with a kind of sneakiness with God. And I think that brings a natural discomfort to the text, and I would say an intentional one.
Yeah, I would say that. Beyond this narrative, that's kind of the brush with which Jacob is painted. I mean, that he has a very strong sense of what's in this for me. And we've seen selfish characters, and we'll see more of them, and they're in the Old Testament scattered throughout. But I can't think of another character off the top of my head in the whole of Scripture that is met with the promise and presence of God and who says, yeah, that sounds good, but let's make sure these boxes get ticked first. There's no one who jumps to mind that has that reaction. Jacob seems to me a unique character. And I think that's a fair assessment, because in the stories that follow, we're going to see more of that.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to land here today. You know, ultimately, there's some texts which we shouldn't resolve. I think on one hand, this is a pivotal God encounter. And on the other hand, it doesn't seem to result in the kind of conversion or 100% transformation experience that seems like it would make sense. And yet, God is written all over it. So all of that's on the table, and I don't think we're going to try to set it all in the right order. I think it's all there. And by the glory and grace of God, it's part of the story of faith.
I think more than Abraham, certainly more than Isaac, and maybe any more than any character I can think of in Genesis and most of the Old Testament, Jacob as a character shows us development. Because this is God's story, we often don't get nuances of how the character grows. And I think as we go through Jacob's story, it seems clear that the author has in mind to show us some examples of what the journey, what the experience of God does to and through Jacob. And I think that stands out. Well, I'll make that case as we go along, and you see whether you agree or not. But we'll continue in his story tomorrow.
It's a good summary. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow.